This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. The Vajrayana tradition of spirituality views the consort relationship as a skillful gateway to non-dual awakening. In this talk, Reggie discusses the consort journey of relationship. He says that consorts help liberate us from fixed points of view by continually challenging our versions of reality. This talk was given at the 2009 Meditating with the Body retreat held in Crestone, Colorado.
So, I said at the last retreat that I was going to talk a little bit more about relationships in this lineage. And I wonder if you would like me to do that a little bit before we end. Would that be of interest? Yeah. When we approach relationships of any kind with other people, we come with our own version of reality, obviously. And this is not an abstract observation. We have a lot of ideas about how things are and about how they should be, and an awful lot of ideas about how we should be. And these are very tightly held. This is part of our whole way of being okay. A lot of beliefs about what spirituality is on every level. We have all these beliefs that we bring to a relationship. And often the people we're attracted to, whether it's friends or parents, because, you know, in our tradition there's a sense that, as you know, that we choose our parents. It's not the other way around, that we're born to certain parents for very important and particular reasons. Or if we're talking about even, you know, teachers and students, or if we're talking about partners, you know, every kind of relationship, that we are generally attracted to people who have quite a different version of reality and quite a different set of ideas about how we should be and they should be and the relationship should be and spirituality, which is the saving grace, that we're attracted to somebody who's really different. And you know, sometimes we think that the difference is just a sort of energetic difference, an emotional difference. Like, I'm an extrovert and so-and-so is an introvert, or I'm tend to be a very cool person and the other person is very warm. You know, a lot of times we sort of see that part of it. But what we don't often see is that we're talking about the whole thing, that we don't see how much the reality that we live in is our own construction, our own safe little fortress. Well, I think in spirituality that nobody should smoke. I think nobody should drink. You know, I think you should be celibate and not have sex. And then we're attracted to somebody who smokes and drinks and likes to have sex. And we might think that they're weak, and we have all our whole way of interpreting how they are. But from their point of view, they think we're uptight and we're disconnected from life. You know, so we have these, you know, we're attracted to people who are very, very different, but we have a way of making it okay because we judge them and we still hang on to our own version. And usually what happens in relationships is you kind of agree not to go to the touchy places, and it's not even a explicit agreement, but there's a sense of not really going to the places where there are these fundamental differences, and we begin to hide. In fact, we've already been hiding our whole life, and so we continue to hide in the relationship, and the only places where we communicate are where we, you know, sense that we can talk, but we won't get into trouble. And of course it doesn't work very well. And so we bounce off, you know, we bump up against the other person. And there are times when my version of reality and yours, it becomes obvious that they're not the same one. But we tend to work our way around it and avoid it. And over a period of time, if it's a long relationship, we develop a certain way of kind of getting along with each other, largely by avoiding a huge amount of potential interaction and sort of walling off large areas. You know, okay, we won't talk about politics, or we won't talk about spirituality, or we won't talk about, you know, how much I like people and you don't. You know, we just won't go there. But it still comes up. And sometimes when it becomes a little too unavoidable, people just get divorced. They just walk away because I'm not going to have my version of reality threatened by you. And if it gets to the point where we can't hide anymore, we'll just get divorced and I'll go find somebody else I can hide with. So that's kind of, you know, what when we approach the path, that's kind of our situation. And in many cases, people practice spirituality and it's the same exact story. And they find a tradition that where they don't have to be really fundamentally threatened. And they find, you know, teachers and teachings that kind of reinforce what they already think. Now, from a certain point of view, you can say, what's wrong with that? That's just the human way. And I agree, you know. Of course, that's how we do it. But this lineage is different from that. That's not really kind of how it works here. And we don't realize that until we're on the journey. But what happens here, and in this, you know, particular tradition that, you know, goes back a long time, I mean, this comes from the Siddhas, what we're talking about here. We're not talking about Chogyam Trungpa alone, or his teachers, or this line of Tibetan practitioners going back to Milarepa. We're going all the way back to India, where this Vajrayana tradition really developed initially. So we're talking about a whole tradition of a way of going about things, which is that there is no version, there is no idea, there is no moral ethic, there is no belief that is sacrosanct. Because those are the building blocks of our avoidance. They're the building blocks that we put between ourselves and reality itself. And so, as we've been saying, you know, throughout this whole program, the purpose of spirituality is to dismantle our egoic structure, dismantle it, so that we can live in a much more direct and naked way with our entire world and our entire life. And we do it because that's the only place freedom is found. It's the only place where there can be real love. As long as you're maintaining your own version, you can't love other people. Your main thing is this narcissistic thing of, I have my version of spirituality, and, you know, fuck you. You know, my bottom line is I'm maintaining my idea of what even spirituality is. But at that point, we can't love other people. Love means completely seeing someone else and making complete room for who they are. And realizing that whatever we think, it doesn't apply to them. We can have our own ideas. It does not apply to them. And in fact, the more we're attached to what we think, the more limited we are as a person. Strangely enough, I know it sounds very weird, but it's the truth of how it works. So within this framework, we do meet people. And the way it works is, you know, sometimes you meet people in life, and this, in our lineage, this is kind of sort of how it seems to work. And you can't hide. It's like the bright light of reality is turned on. And you may try to play games with that person, but it doesn't work. It's not that you yourself are at a higher level of development. It's that you've gotten yourself into a situation where you can't, where self-deception simply does not work on either side. And where whatever you think, it's not going to happen that way. And whatever you think spirituality is, the other person is going to be in a different place. It's almost as if the fact that you live in one world and the other person lives in another becomes totally obvious. And what it does is, it completely freaks you out, because it's sort of like you realize that everything that you're hanging on to is just you're hanging on to it. And if you think that, if you think things need to be one way, and you have deeply, this is the interesting point, we have such deeply held beliefs about how things should be, and then they're not that way. And you see they're not that way, and you try to insist on your version, and it is totally obvious what you're trying to do. So it's like every day, every minute, there's this, what you think is thrown back in your face. And it's not because the other person is like particularly, mean or aggressive or even trying. It's just that the nature of the relationship itself does not permit any hiding at all. And I know for both of us, there are many times, and even in the course of a week, where each one of us feels, I can't do this. I can't do it. I can't do this. It's just too much. You may not be a quitter, but it crosses your mind. Maybe I could just quit. Maybe I could just not do it. But the problem is that things come up and you work through them, and you let them go because you have no choice. You can't, when you see you're trying to manipulate reality, you can't really do it. You know what I'm saying? It's sort of, you have to let it go. And you come through it and you feel a sense of relief and freedom, and you look at the other person and you feel so much appreciation for the situation. It's in other words, the situation itself is the teachings. And we do this ourselves. This is the individual journey, is that we practice, a lot of stuff comes up, we feel like, I hate this lineage, I hate these teachings, they're torturing me, I don't appreciate what's going on now, I don't like it. And we stick with it, because what are we going to do? You can't quite walk away, so you're sort of there, and you feel like you've been put into prison, and you're being tortured to death. And then something breaks, and you come through it, and you feel, you see you're in a different place. And you have so much appreciation for the teachings. And maybe you write me an email, and, oh, I love the teachings, I love the lineage. And it's very genuine, because we really do see how much it's helping us. And we even see that the suffering and the confusion and the pain is part of the journey, and we appreciate that, we get it. And the relationships become completely part of that process. The Sangha relationships, the relationship with partners, and the relationship with families becomes that way too. And even though your children or your parents aren't doing it, nevertheless, you're approaching things in that way. And it's sort of like all of the sense of being able to comfort oneself and kind of hide out, that's not what's going on, for any of us. And particularly with family members, where it's so incredibly painful, you begin to realize it's not like we're different and we have this history and it doesn't work. We have a different attitude, which is, well, what about this? What is this showing me? What do I see about myself? Because I can't get along with this person. So at a certain point, every relationship we have in our lives becomes a mirror for us. And the practice I showed you the other day, where you do the compassion practice and bring up the energy from the earth, and then you put somebody out front. And particularly if you put somebody out front who's problematic, it gives you a way to, I can see how I'm trying to impose my version of reality on them, and the big mirror is right there, shining back at you. So, it's very difficult. I mean, it's very, very difficult. And it's kind of like, we were talking about sleep the other day, where from a certain point of view, when we go to bed, you know, it's like the end of the day, it's been hard, and about the only thing I want to do is become unconscious. I want to check out. I mean, really, we often feel that when we go to bed. It's like, thank God, I can finally go to sleep. You know, and sort of get away from it for a little while. And then you're not sleeping the same way, and you can't go there anymore. And that, I'm not saying that is going to happen to us necessarily, but you know, at a certain point it does happen. And it's like, oh my God, you know, this is the one place I could check out. Now I can't ever check out. And the feeling of claustrophobia, the claustrophobia of the light is unbelievable. I think this is something Chris may have told me, I can't remember, but one of my students, and I think it might have been you, Chris, was in retreat over at, you know, down by the stupa, they have some cabins down there. And there's so much silence and so much space. And what my student said was, it was so claustrophobic, I couldn't stand it. You know, how could space and openness be claustrophobic? It's claustrophobic because you can't get away from reality. You can't escape your own mind. You can't escape your own life. And we feel that way. You know, we just want to escape. We want to run away into our little version of spirituality. Now I'm going to do my little Dharma practice, and everything's cool, and I'm safe. And, you know, it's not like that. That's not what genuine spirituality is. It's that every dearly held belief is going to be challenged, and we're going to have to let go of it at a certain point. And it's very, very difficult. Now, my situation is illustrative. So, you know, Caroline and I can barely stand it a lot of the time. And yet, the sense of connection is so unbelievably strong, and the love that we feel for each other is so strong. So it's interesting, you have both things going on. It's like the bright light of reality is being turned up and up and up and up, and you can't really run away because how you feel about that. But what are you going to do, run away from everything? Run away from the truth and the reality? And you'd like to. I mean, there's nothing more you'd like to do. But you kind of get it. You're going to run away from that. You're going to run away for here's a person. You sit down with them and you see them and they see you. You're going to run away from that? You'd like to. You know, you really, I mean, it does cross your mind, like, how the hell can I get out of here? And it's not because of the ignorance and the neurosis. That's not it. It's because of the sanity and the brightness of the situation. And we do, you know, we spend periods of time apart. It used to be long periods. She'd be in Hong Kong and I was here, and she would come back over, you know, like once a month for a week, and we did that for a year and a half. And then she moved, you know, we're living together now, and I mean, it's what's happening, and it's, from a spiritual viewpoint, it's a dream come true to be with somebody like that and to have the journey so highly intensified. From a samsaric point of view and from the point of view of one's personal comfort, it's a total nightmare.
Download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Our music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Kechog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.